the thing that most people get wrong about pricing is that it's not math. They think it's math, and it's not math. It's psychology. One thing we learned from Amazon is that it's the best pricing model that wins, not the best price.
Are diving into an episode that is going to inspire you with tales of growth and scaling from one of our guests. Today's guest is going to be special because we hand select people who are actively building and growing their businesses, people who know what it feels like to be in your position. As a listener of this podcast, trying to figure out what your next growth steps are, and they're going to share with us those insights, that journey, and what they're doing right now to position themselves in a better place for growth and scaling. So check it out if you haven't done so already and subscribe to our channel. We are bringing some awesome business leaders into your circle, into your headphones, into your computer monitor today to show you what you can be doing to grow and scale your business. Share the love, subscribe to the channel, and at the end of this episode, to see what you should be doing next to grow and scale your business. Hey, welcome back to the show. And today I've got Mark with us to tell us about his company. And Mark, we're all dying to know, who are you and what do you do?
Hey, Todd, thank you for having me. I'm Mark Walker. I'm the CEO of New.io. It's a Bay Area startup. I'm a Canadian. I actually live in Toronto. But
it's all right. We won't hold it against you.
Thank you. But but it's an amazing company. And we've sort of, what we're kind of known for is essentially everybody you ever heard of in AI, or almost everybody, runs New as part of their stack. And we can talk more about that. But that was, it's a big achievement. And it has a lot to do with what's happening now in go-to-market and in pricing. But yeah, it's super fun to be here.
Okay. So I mean, you can't just dump that on us and not explain the backstory here. Like, how old is New? Why did you start it? Who did you initially try to sell for? And then how did AI fall into your lap? Like, this is kind of a funky move here.
Yeah, so New was actually not, I didn't create it. It was created by an incredible woman named Tina Kung.
Awesome.
And she was ex-Zora, so that was a subscription billing company, Zora. She was also ex-Steelbrick, which most people would now know as Salesforce CPQ, which used to be the CPQ that people would use for enterprise sales. That's kind of being shot in the head by Salesforce now. And and then and she did a lot of other interesting things at Oracle and a bunch of things like that. And her vision was that if you wanted to be able to grow a company really, really quickly, you couldn't really be translating, like you do your pricing over here and you do your self-service over here and you do your billing over here, because you would like end up having too many things that didn't quite work the same way. And so she said, okay, so I'm going to basically make one system. And I came in about 2 years later and said, all right, let's get going. And I'll tell you more about the strategy in a second, but that's basically, so basically we sell to tech companies ranging from the smallest startups and all the way up to multi-billion dollar companies.
I love it. Okay. Pricing. I mean, there's so much to go that goes into pricing and most people don't get it right. And so walk us through the big problem here. I mean, what are SaaS companies in particular and AI use? I mean, now that we're going off of more usage models and things like that, it is incredibly challenging to price anything nowadays because nobody, at one point, everyone was just all about the monthly recurring revenue. And now it's like, well, I don't hardly use it. How about we, like, walk us through the big greater problem here, because it is a problem.
Yeah, totally. And you got to kind of think about it from different types of companies, right? So, so imagine that you're just fresh out of the startup ecosystem and you're just basically launching your company. A lot of companies will start with a PLG type approach, very, you know, good, better, best, really, really simple pricing. The reason they're doing that is because they have no credibility in the marketplace. And so they're trying to make it easy to buy. And easy to buy, then they get the usage metrics, they understand the value, and they grow really quickly. And obviously we've seen some examples recently where that strategy has paid off in droves, because you know, think of like Cursor, who's a new customer. Right. And
congrats.
Lots of other people like that. Well, OpenAI, right, who's also a new customer, where basically you go from zero to like, you go like to bam, basically by just selling $20 at a time.
Right.
The second group of people are people who have a substantial business in that space, but then they need to start to move over to sell to enterprises. So they're still growing really quickly, but now they need to do enterprise contracts. Well, those contracts aren't just different in the pricing. They're different in the entire structure, because you know, if you go to sell to a bank, the bank's going to go, sorry, tell you what, we'll tell you how we're going to buy. That's, right. And so you end up with these uniquely contracted things.
Right.
And then the third group of people are people like have a $500 million business, and they're sitting there going, oh, wait a second, this entire seat-based thing, that appears to be going away, right? But they, if they were to make a mistake, But if they make a mistake in changing their pricing model, in the first case, you just might not grow quickly enough. In the second case, you might just have a bit of problem penetrating the enterprise. In the third case, you could drive your share price to zero, right? You could totally screw it up. We have all of those types of companies coming to us because the, fundamentally what they need to be able to do is try different things. And in quote to cash, when you try something, you own it. Because if somebody says yes, like say you say, I'm going to price based on the number of penguins you own. Like you are now counting penguins for the next 3 to 5 years, right?
Right.
And people come to us because they go, every experiment I'm going to run, I got to use, I got to basically deliver it. Every custom contract is an experiment, right? So, so the people come to us because it can be implemented crazy fast and because it's crazy flexible because it's one system and therefore you can do whatever the hell you want.
And so is it the entire purchase process done in your platform, or is it just a sequence of building equations to help you see what it, I mean, is it modeling? Is it is it actual implementation, or is it all of it?
No, it's the whole thing. So think of it like as if Salesforce CPQ and Zora had a baby, but they got HubSpot to be the midwife. And so it looks like HubSpot, does math like NetSuite, and is crazy flexible in a way that the separate CPQ and a separate self-service and separate billing system can't be. But it's, you know, it's by making it one system, you get two crazy big benefits. One is the flexibility I was just talking about. And the second one is you can implement it incredibly quickly. Like OpenAI went live in 8 weeks.
Wow.
You know, what? Anthropic went live in 12, right?
Holy cow.
You know, and they, and interestingly, those businesses that people think are quite similar are not that similar. Like they're quite different. And
well, they probably have different objectives too and different clients. I mean,
Different products actually. And, and so, so it's by making it one system, you don't just make it, you know, more flexible, you make it easier to own. And so one of the things we're really proud of is none of our customers have ongoing consulting to manage their system.
Oh, fascinating.
So total cost of ownership.
That's not normal.
No.
I mean, I literally had a buddy down to Dreamforce the other day, and it was just like, okay, like everybody there is a consultant for this product. And you're telling me that you're able to plug and play and they can run it all internally without needing assistance from anyone else.
Right. Now, they may still need assistance to run Salesforce because I'm sitting on Salesforce, but they don't need outside assistance. So that means that, you know, the CRO goes to the product team and says, look, I think we really should try, you know, I don't know, discounted pricing for our German nonprofit companies with less than 500, whatever, right? And they go, and they go, because things are a really big growth market there in German nursery schools. And so they basically spin up their pricing and then they can test it. And if anybody accepts it, they can deploy it and bill it, no problem. And
okay,
that's
of
kind
all,
of a superpower.
Congrats on the most random proposition there. That was really creative. But second of all, that is so cool. I mean, this is really, really cool because there, it is challenging even for a small business to be able to be that flexible with pricing models. I know that even just for me personally, I took a big shift in my agency work and I'm trying to phase it more into strategy work. And it took me weeks just to try and muscle together my own pricing strategy, trying to figure out what's going to work for me on a much smaller scale than some of these enterprise clients you're talking about. Is it for us as well? Or is this primarily an enterprise level play?
No, our smallest customers are complete startups and they, or even actually some of them are actually quite sizable companies. They go live completely by themselves with no consulting at all.
Wow.
And that's about to get even more doable. Now, to be fair, the sort of larger companies that did that, that's more about them. Like they did our training and then at night they went and did the entire project, which shows that they were definitely higher wattage people. That's not normal. But actually, good shout out. It's Exonify. Okay. It's Exonify. Amazing team over there. Right?
Awesome. Awesome.
But that's, but the company, our company is like fanatical about driving down the skill level you need to do this. We want people to think about growing their business, not about managing our technology. Now, there is some managing that goes into it. But we productize the result, kind of like, you know, remember NetSuite run by, you know, rebuilt by HubSpot kind of idea.
Right.
But we also productized the back end, because in order for people to do it, we basically, it's super complex. Like, it's really, really powerful. But we don't want people to actually learn everything. Just do what, learn what you need to do and make it.
Nor does anybody want to learn everything. And so let me get this straight, though. So it isn't like you're sitting on top of other people's software. You are the entire end-to-end solution.
Yeah. So basically the only thing, the best way to think about it is Nu is an incredibly powerful agentic transaction system. So that's billing, self-service, agentic, and then it has this interface that's on Salesforce, which everybody in the Salesforce ecosystem thinks is the most advanced CPQ available on Salesforce today.
Gotcha. Right?
And so, but from us, from our point of view, we sometimes call it the Trojan horse. We think of go-to-market, it's the Trojan horse. It just turns out that the Trojan horse is so good that the Trojans come out of the fortress and buy the horse, right? You know, and then take it back inside.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, this is cool. So this is fascinating, because there are so many people who struggle with this problem from, as you said, startup to enterprise level. Pricing is something most people don't understand. I have worked with so many businesses where we try and build out a pro forma and we're trying to measure metrics and trying to measure, okay, what is your expense for this output? And all, you know, plugging all those pieces together is not easy. How do you make that easier? And I guess even a step further, most of our listening audience right now is in that I just launched and now I'm trying to put my systems and pieces together stage. How do you advise them to think about those types of next steps in their growth stage?
So the first thing I would say is that the thing that most people get wrong about pricing is that it's not math. They think it's math, and it's not math. It's psychology. One thing we learned from Amazon is that it's the best pricing model that wins, not the best price. We're all paying Jeff Bezos like $120 for the privilege of overpaying for stuff from China, right?
Fair.
And the reason why it works is that we hate paying for shipping. So even though we actually are paying for shipping, because it's why the $2 chatka from China costs $25, right? The fact that we're paying him more to avoid shipping, which is exactly what Costco does
shipping
as well
with their
memberships.
Yeah.
I mean, shipping. I got the word wrong. But that's what you got to focus on, right? So I'll give you a good example of what we do. When people come along to buy Nu and they say, well, how much is Nu? And we go, well, or how is it priced? And we go, well, how would you like it to be priced? And they sort of go, sorry, what? I said, well, you know, we have customers that have very, very low volume, very, very high value contracts, and they're not going to want to give us a percentage of revenue. They're going to buy some seats, and then maybe pay a little bit for their billing module and blah, 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 blah. And then we have other customers who have no sales reps at all, right? And just thousands, tens of thousands or more, hundreds of thousands of invoices a month going out, which are all $200, right? Well, they don't want to pay for seats. They don't want to pay for per transaction. They want to pay a very, very tiny fraction of that revenue. And we say, so we totally let you mix and match those in whichever way makes sense to you.
Right.
And then the customer goes, right, and that's what I could do. Bingo. Like, so in other words, if you're going to market, what you should think about is, what if you just thought about it from the customer's point of view all the time and said, how can I make the pricing as closely tied as possible to the outcome the customer wants? And if you think about it that way, you then go, it's easy, because it's easier anyway. You still have to experiment, but you say, okay, so the customer wants to achieve goal X. Can I get pricing that is directly tied to that? Now, outcome-based pricing is the ultimate version of that, but I don't think you have to get that far. You can just get closer, and the customer will choose the vendor that appears to have the pricing that they are least likely to regret. Least likely to regret, I guess, is what the customer
says. I'm hearing you, and if I'm like anyone listening in my audience, I'm getting frustrated, because I spent months trying to piece together a new pricing model for all my new crap, and I'm realizing that what you're describing is a way better solution set. Stop it! That is way too smart.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. Knock it off. Mean to do that.
All right. No, this is actually really, really cool, because I honestly thought I was really, really smart, and I was actually talking to clients. I was talking to like people about it. What would work best for you? And I kind of came up with a hybrid solution, like what you're saying, where my initial product is a fixed price because it includes a lot of background work and you know, all the stuff, right? Assessments and things like that. But then on the other side of it, I love commission-based stuff. And so if I make you more money, I want to make more money, right? And so I see that this is a really, really cool solution for anybody. Like, and we're talking consultants, you're talking about usage fees, you're talking, I mean, this is a really great solution for a lot of people. And if this conversation is above what you're even capable of thinking about, if you're early enough in your business model to not understand the value of what we're talking about, just listen to this whole episode two or three times and it will all start to click. Right, Mark? I mean,
simple. I think most people get it. Think of it this way. Could you close more business if you could literally ask the customer, what seems fair to you? And the customer says, so look, and you should definitely frame it and say, some of our customers pay us big retainer fees because right. they have very, very specific objectives right. and they don't want us to participate in the outcome because they just want us to move the ball from here to here. Other right. customers, they really are counting on us to move the ball. And in fact, define what the ball is and where here is and where there is. And in that case, we're totally happy working for a percentage of the outcome. It can be, we can figure out how it is. Now imagine if you had a business system, regardless of what that is, where you could actually talk to a customer and yeah. say, we can actually do it whatever way makes sense. What I want it to be really clear is that you think it's fair and that I think it's fair, right?
Crazy.
People, honest to God, I've sold a lot of software in my life. There's so yeah. many companies, things I would have bought from the person who was offering me that
right,
relationship.
You like them. Right,
I don't
right,
give a
right.
rat's ass what you're selling. unless you're selling OpenAI, even OpenAI and Anthropic, they compete with each other. But unless you're selling something completely sui generis, unique, it's actually going to be really the relationship or the business model that'll help
right.
you win.
Okay. I love this. And thank you for the therapy and the coaching session here that live on this podcast. This is fantastic. But talk me through this. I mean, as you've been able to grow and scale this business, I mean, how old is the business? You came into it after 2 years or so, right?
It's 5 years old now. We've been in market for just coming up on 3 years.
Okay. First of all, that's so freaking rad. I mean, for you to be that young of a business and be able to capture market share in an industry that is arguably the most powerful industry in the marketplace right now, kudos to you. Way to go.
Thank you.
Awesome. My guess is it's partly because you're priced right. I mean, this whole thing
we're expensive.
Intersectional.
No,
is that right?
We're expensive.
They like what they're paying for, though.
We are well priced, but not cheap. In other words, we get people all the time going, well, company X is going to offer us, in fact, even company X, who's an extremely large software company, is going to give us the software for free. And we just sort of go, sorry, when was the last time that company gave away software for free? I think that through, right?
Really?
Right. Seriously. And so, we're not trying to be inexpensive. We're trying to be really closely tied to their perceived
right.
value. And that's a big part of it. The other part of it is we're super intentional. We know we have, people talk about having an ICP. We have
right.
like an absolutely ideal customer profile and we own all
Love
of
it.
Them, all
Love
of
it.
Them. So like just, well, I would say for a young company starting out, shrink your target market to the smallest
yep.
possible target market that you can go after and then go
yep.
kill it and then go
right.
out. Maybe kill it while going out. You don't have to be that focused,
but
just make sure.
No, thank you
kill,
for saying
kill.
That. No, I appreciate you saying that because it truly is probably the biggest problem for every startup is you're trying to serve too many people's problems and they're all different. And so you just end up drowning, looking for clients in that avatar or in any of your avatars, right? So that's great advice. But when you come into a two-year-old company with a founder who was networked, knew her stuff, had amazing product already developed, and then you come in and say, okay, listen, I think we can blow this up. What were some of the key things that you kind of brought to the table that made her say, okay, Mark, you're in, come help me do this thing?
I think he kind of got it backwards. I showed up and I was introduced to Nu by an investor. And they said, you want to be a CEO again? I just sold a company in TA, which I owned outright. I was like,
nice.
No, I want to go kiteboarding. Right. That's what they want to do. And they
right.
said, can you just meet this investor or this founder? And
yeah.
so I met Tina, and Tina had such a clear vision. And she's not just a technical genius, and she is
yeah.
an absolute technical genius, a
right.
product genius. I wouldn't say technical, like she is very technical, but her product vision is incredible. But her vision of the business, we compete with Salesforce, right? And we believe that CPQ as a category is going to agentically change radically or go away.
Right.
But so we basically went and built the best CPQ in the world as a chess move, Like, it's not even the objective. Like, we're going to go out and do it, and we're going to build, and we believe in the category. We believe in building these amazing CPQs, but we believe the amazing CPQ also needs to be agentic. So what I what I brought to the table was maybe a lot of experience, a ridiculous amount of aggression. You know, I'm a nice person, but I literally am not afraid of anything. And so she needed somebody who thought that taking a run at Salesforce and Zora was a good business idea. So I did think it was, I thought it was a fantastic business idea. And so again, lesson number two is go after a marketplace in which the incumbents are old.
Yeah. A little crusty, not as eager to innovate. Love it. Okay. And so you determined to take on the biggest solution set for enterprise level clients, thinking and knowing that with your back end and with your systems, you could, but Did you doubt it at any point as you were trying to like go head to head and toe to toe on these things? Were you ever at all nervous that, okay, we're going to have some failures, or did you have failures that may have thrown that off track?
Yeah, totally. I always like to say to people, this is too hard not to love it. Right. Like, in other words, like, and also tell them, like things are going to go wrong. Right. They have to go wrong. Like you simply can't grow businesses this fast without breaking things. So one of the things that happened was, an existing customer that we have today, Shelly Piper, at the was one of our first customers we got, and we lost them. And they were one of our largest customers, and we lost them. Ouch. And we lost them because their objective changed. So they bought us for case number A, which we were really good at, and then they switched their objective to case number B, which we were planning to do but didn't do well enough. And that was really hard because we didn't, like, you're taking this churn and you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't mislead the customer. You didn't overpromise.
Right.
So the hard decision.
I hate those ones. Yeah.
Oh, it's awful. It was terrible. Yeah. And you know, don't talk to me about the bankruptcy of Bench Accounting. That was like another red thing. But but we basically, instead of saying, you know, fighting to retain the customer, we realized they were right and they need to do what they need to do to be successful. And so we said, what can we do to make your transition off new as convenient and successful as possible?
Smart.
And we did that. We did an amazing job at that. And then about a year and a half later, they switched from Maxio to move on to new. And they moved on to new and switched their entire infrastructure to new. So like quoting, self-service, billing. And we're very proud to have them back. And you just understand this. How you treat people when you're, you know, when you're, it's easy to be magnanimous when you're winning, but when you're losing, you still got to be, you know, the person you are.
I love it. That's a great example and a great story. And I think that for those of you listening, don't let emotion get in the way of your values, right? I mean, it would be so easy for you in that frustration and them moving off your platform to be so irritated and get irrational sometimes. But because you handled it right, and I can tell you're a very principle-centered man, and my guess is that Tina is also very principle-centered in how she set up the entire company, that it was an easy move for you to do. It was an easy obligation to feel that way, right?
Yeah, we knew what the right thing to do was. It was an easy decision to make, but it was also painful and hard. But look, also, the other side of the coin, right? You know, you can easily imagine customers who also wouldn't be as easy to deal with as they were. So full props to their team as well, because they were like, yeah, we feel terrible about this, but we really need to do this. And we're like, it's okay. It was more like two people who really like, it's not you, it's me. It's like, no, it's actually both of us, you know? So it's always, look, I think basically treat people the way you want to be treated. If you want respect, be respectful. If you want to be trusted, be trustworthy, right? You know, so.
Now, I got a question for you though. In your product development flow, as losing your biggest client happens, oftentimes as a product manager or as a CEO of the company, you're thinking to yourself, okay, if we were to get them back, what would we need to do differently? Did you in that year and a half that you were separated, develop any systems or processes or parts of your system that could then accommodate that specific client avatar? Or did you just say nose down on what you're doing?
No. Like the really frustrating thing was it was completely in our roadmap. And had they said had they said to us, like, hey, we really need to do this other thing, which they didn't know. Like they didn't know. We would have said, actually they did know, but they didn't know the level of emphasis that it would require. So then we would have maybe like they maybe wouldn't have bought from us and, you know, whatever. But in the meantime, we just kept going. You know, we're very methodically building towards, you know, what is now, you know, we've got this incredible agentic system, and we were basically on a path, but we knew we were going to be building the agentic system before we knew that there was going to be an agentic system, in the sense that we knew we were going to build an AI-based transactional interface. We just, in 2022, nobody knew that we were about
nobody
to see...
Nobody knew how it would come to play, yeah.
That's right. That's right. We knew that it would come to play. That was clearly happening. We didn't know that OpenAI Anthropic would burst onto the scene and change the way we think of it. Obviously, so many other exciting companies.
Is it kind of fun, though? I mean, you and I are the age where, we watched the .com come and boom, and then all that evolution, and then years of just kind of normalizing all of that. And now we're kind of on this precipice of witnessing this second stage of evolution in technology. And how cool does it feel now to feel like you're riding this at the right time and you just happen to be caught up in the right movement with the right tools? I mean, that's a pretty cool, fortuitous thing.
I think, I think we're very lucky that the trends that led to the changes that we're seeing now are not uniquely being driven by AI. They're just being maximized by it. The move away from seat-based pricing, it's not like all of a sudden people didn't get mad at the incumbent software companies for, constantly it's 20% or 9% or whatever it is every single year. Like, people were already mad about that and trying to figure out better pricing models. That was what was driving the thesis of the whole company.
Sure.
But it is super cool to be in this situation. And when we realized what was happening, we just basically completely focused on making sure that we understood what was happening with these AI companies. We understood what their pricing models were.
Right.
And frankly, I think the team at OpenAI would agree that was the first big AI company we landed. Partly the reason we won it was we were the most honest company. Like, we were actually completely honest with them about what we could do and what we couldn't do, whereas most people were like, we do that, we do that, we do that. And we're like, this one thing, that thing, we don't do that yet. But we're working on it. It's on a roadmap, but we don't do that yet. And I think
that's
when you get that kind of trust, what you get is the opportunity to sit down with these amazing people, not just at OpenAI, at Anthropic, and all these other companies, and listen. And listen.
Yeah. What
about
would you like it to do? What would this product be in its coolest iteration for you? Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's basically ongoing conversation we have with people who are inventing the future. It's pretty amazing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I love this story. I love your journey. Absolutely. For those of you listening, and you're needing that kind of tooling in your business, which I would imagine fits. At this point, your ICP is kind of broadened significantly, right? I mean,
we go all the way to the bottom and all the way to the top, all the way. Like, there's nobody. I don't think there are obviously technology companies that are bigger than the very huge ones we've got, but there's nobody going faster.
Love it. Yeah. Well, again, that insight and that perspective and the lessons that you taught us today about choosing ICPs, niching into these people, and then expanding out from there is such a valuable lesson. I really appreciate you sharing that with us, along with all the other coolness about what you're doing, who you're doing it for. I mean, that's amazing. What a fantastic success story. We wish you the best. And in parting, what have you got as a last tidbit of advice for those that are struggling to kind of get over that hump and niche into the group that they want to do? What is it? What's the thing?
I would say that anybody who's, if what you're doing right now is not working, I would suggest that you just think of it this way. Go find the part of the economy that you're focused on, the vertical, the type of thing, and focus on what is going to be different about that in the next 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. You don't have to worry about trying to imagine 3 years anymore.
Right.
Like, just being 3 or 6 months ahead of the incumbents. And then try to figure out then in your customer base, the people who that most matters to, and just focus on them.
Yeah.
And it's a micro slicing type of thing, because if you can't do that, go do something else, because somebody else will. But if you really think about it, if you're in your area, just try to focus on that and don't worry about trying to do everything else in the marketplace. Just trying to find the people for whom the rest of the marketplace doesn't matter. We don't do 1500 line quotes for, I don't know, whoever does 1500 line quotes, we don't do that.
Right.
I mean, it's not because we don't think it's a thing. It's just because it's not the most important thing.
Who wants to read through all that crap? They just want
I don't understand that. I don't understand that whole thing. I don't understand how, I don't understand why, I don't understand who, and I don't understand when. I just know that, when I talk to like Deloitte and people, they go, yes, some of our customers need that. I'm like, we can do that, by the way. We can totally do it. I still don't understand why we would
Seriously.
Yeah. And he's going to read it.
And then the funniest part about those types of quotes, too, anyway, is that you get this massive book of a quote, and then they're like, but we're going to do it today for X. And it's like, why didn't you just say you were going to do it for X?
That's what the new pricing models are, right? The new pricing models are literally one line. It says you commit to spend $10 million and you can spend all this stuff. And the stuff is in a binder, whatever, on a website. And those are prices. And because of your pricing, because of your $10 million commitment, you're going to get 40% off. That's it. That's the whole thing, right? And now the problem becomes, that seems so simple, except that when somebody goes and changes the contract or they don't actually hit the 10 million or whatever happens, that's when it gets hairy. So it's a... The crazy thing is that couldn't be simpler if you think about it. It's like, how much we'd like to spend? 10 million. Okay, well, if you spend 10 million, I'll give you 40% off. What? Everything.
We're your partner. Thank you.
Yeah, we're your buddy. So, like, I'm oversimplifying it, but it's like.
No. Listen, coming from a guy who's negotiated deals with some of the largest companies in the world right now, I love it. I could listen to this all day long. So, yeah. Mark, thank you so much for being a part of the show with us. And honestly, for those of you out there who need a better solution, go check out New right now. The links are down in the description of the show. And we can't wait to see how far you grow this thing and what your exit is going to look like, because this is it's an exciting rocket ship you're on right now. Way to go.
Thank you, Todd. It was fun to talk to you. And thank you for having me on.
All right. Hey, we hope you enjoyed that episode. As with all of our guests that we've enjoyed on this podcast, we hope you take a minute to reflect on how relevant was that to your growth journey? How relevant is that to your business? If you are not taking steps to grow and scale your business, chances are you're not growing or scaling. So how do you know if you're growth ready? Check it out at growthreadiness.com. If you haven't done so already, we have a free assessment at growthreadiness.com. That's right, growthreadiness.com. And measure up to see if you truly are growth ready. If that magical amount of funding or that magical client popped into your doorstep today, would you be ready? Could you grow and scale your business with what you've got ready right now? Chances are there are some places you're strong, there's some places you're weak. We let you explore that for free at growthreadiness.com. Click on the assessment at the top right. And we challenge everyone that listens to the podcast to go see how growth ready your business is from your perspective as an owner, founder, operations director, or even a sales manager. Is your company on a path to growth readiness? If it's not, reach out. Let us know what we can do to help. We have tons of resources, tons of free stuff, and some really, really high quality paid stuff that's going to help your company reach that level of growth that you hoped it could be on. Whether you're aiming for exit, whether you're aiming for a fundraise, or whether you're just trying to sustain the growth you've already had, go to growthreadiness.com and check out what you're doing and if it's working for you. Thanks for being a part of the Growth and Scaling podcast. We hope all these interviews are helping you determine the best path for your growth and giving you real-world examples of what you could be doing in your business today.